Chapter 33. Wherein a certain gentleman becomes particular in his attentions to a certain lady, and more coming events than one, cast their shadows before the family were within 2 or 3 days of their departure from Mrs. Todgers, and the commercial gentlemen were to a man despondent, and not to be comforted, because of the approaching separation, when Bailey Jr., at the jocund time of noon, presented himself before Miss Charity Pecksniff, then sitting with her sister in the banquet chamber, hemming 6 new pocket handkerchiefs for Mr. Jenkins, and having expressed a hope, preliminary and pious, that he might be blessed, gave her in his pleasant way to understand that a visitor attended to pay his respects to her, and was at that moment waiting in the drawing room. Perhaps this last announcement showed in a more striking point of view than many lengthened speeches could have done, the trustfulness and faith of Bailey's nature, since he had, in fact, last seen the visitor on the doormat, where, after signifying to him that he would do well to go upstairs, he had left him to the guidance of his own sagacity. Hence it was at least an even chance that the visitor was then wandering on the roof of the house, or vainly seeking to extricate himself from the maze of bedrooms. Todgers being precisely that kind of establishment in which an unpiloted stranger is pretty sure to find himself in some place where he least expects, and least desires to be. A gentleman for me. ... cried Charity, pausing in her work. My gracious, Bailey. ... said Bailey. It is my gracious, and it? Wouldn't I be gracious neither, not if I was him? ... The remark was rendered somewhat obscure in itself, by reason, as the reader may have observed, of a redundancy of negatives, but accompanied by action expressive of a faithful couple walking arm in arm towards a parochial church, mutually exchanging looks of love, it clearly signified this youth's conviction that the caller's purpose was of an amorous tendency. Miss Charity affected to reprove so great a liberty, but she could not help smiling. He was a strange boy, to be sure. There was always some ground of probability and likelihood mingled with his absurd behavior. That was the best of it. But I don't know any gentleman, Bailey, said Miss Pecksniff. I think you must have made a mistake. Mr. Bailey smiled at the extreme wildness of such a supposition, and regarded the young ladies with unimpaired affability. My dear Mary, said Charity, who can it be? Isn't it odd? I have a great mind not to go to him really. So very strange, you know. The younger sister plainly considered that this appeal had its origin in the pride of being called upon and asked for, and that it was intended as an assertion of superiority, and a retaliation upon her for having captured the commercial gentleman. Therefore, she replied, with great affection and politeness, that it was, no doubt, very strange indeed, and that she was totally at a loss to conceive what the ridiculous person unknown could mean by it. Quite impossible to divine. ... Charity, with some sharpness, though still, at the same time, you needn't be angry, my dear. Thank you, retorted Mary, singing at her needle. I am quite aware of that, my love. I am afraid your head is turned, you silly thing, said Cherry. Do you know, my dear, said Mary, with engaging candor, that I have been afraid of that, myself, all along. So much incense and nonsense, and all the rest of it, is enough to turn a stronger head than mine. What a relief it must be to you, my dear, to be so very comfortable in that respect, and not to be worried by those odious men. How do you do it, Cherry? Apostrophe, this artless inquiry might have led to turbulent results, but for the strong emotions of delight evinced by Bailey Jr., whose relish in the turn the conversation had lately taken was so acute that it impelled and forced him to the instantaneous performance of a dancing step, extremely difficult in its nature, and only to be achieved in a moment of ecstasy, which is commonly called the frog's hornpipe. A manifestation so lively, brought to their immediate recollection the great virtuous precept, keep up appearances whatever you do, apostrophe in which they had been educated. They forbore at once, and jointly signified to Mr. Bailey, that if he should presume to practice that figure any more in their presence, they would instantly acquaint Mrs. Todgers with the fact, and would demand his condign punishment, at the hands of that lady. The young gentleman having expressed the bitterness of his contrition, by affecting to wipe away scalding tears with his apron, and afterwards feigning to wring a vast amount of water from that garment, held the door open, while Miss Charity passed out, and so that damsel went in state upstairs, to receive her mysterious adorer. By some strange occurrence of favorable circumstances he had found out the drawing room, and was sitting there alone. Ah, cousin! Apostrophe, apostrophe, he said. Here I am, you see. You thought I was lost, I'll be bound. Well, how do you find yourself by this time? Apostrophe, Miss Charity replied, that she was quite well, and gave Mr. Jonas Chuzzle with her hand. That's right, apostrophe, said Mr. Jonas, and you've got over the fatigues of the journey, have you? I say, how's the other one? Apostrophe, my sister is very well, I believe, apostrophe, returned the young lady. I have not heard her complain of any indisposition, sir. Perhaps you would like to see her, and ask her yourself? Apostrophe, apostrophe, no, no, cousin. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Jonas, sitting down beside her on the window seat. Don't be in a hurry. There's no occasion for that, you know. What a cruel girl you are. Apostrophe, it's impossible for you to know, apostrophe, said Jerry, whether I am or not. Apostrophe, well, perhaps it is, apostrophe, said Mr. Jonas. I say, did you think I was lost? You haven't told me that. Apostrophe, I didn't think at all about it, apostrophe, answered Jerry. Didn't you though? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Jonas, pondering upon this strange reply. Did the other one? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I am sure it's impossible for me to say what my sister may or may not have thought on such a subject, apostrophe, cried Jerry. She never said anything to me about it, one way or other. Apostrophe, didn't she laugh about it? Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired Jonas. No, she didn't even laugh about it, apostrophe, answered Charity. She's a terrible one to laugh, and she? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Jonas, lowering his voice. She is very lively, apostrophe, said Jerry. Liveliness is a pleasant thing, when it don't lead to spending money. And it? Apostrophe, asked Mr. Jonas. Very much so, indeed, apostrophe, said Jerry, with a demureness of manner that gave a very disinterested character to her assent. Such liveliness as yours, I mean, you know, apostrophe, observed Mr. Jonas, as he nudged her with his elbow. I should have come to see you before, but I didn't know where you was. How quick you hurried off, that morning. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I was amenable to my papa's directions, apostrophe, said Miss Charity. I wish he had given me his direction, apostrophe, returned her cousin, and then I should have found you out before. Why, I shouldn't have found you even now, if I hadn't met him in the street this morning. What a sleek, sly chap he is. Just like a tomcat, and he? Apostrophe, I must trouble you to have the goodness to speak more respectfully of my papa, Mr. Jonas, apostrophe, said Charity. I can't allow such a tone as that, even in jest. Apostrophe, ecod, you may say what you like of my father, then, and so I give you leave, apostrophe, said Jonas. I think it's liquid aggravation that circulates through his veins, and not regular blood. How old should you think my father was, cousin? Apostrophe, apostrophe, old, no doubt, apostrophe, replied Miss Charity, but a fine old gentleman. Apostrophe, a fine old gentleman. Apostrophe, apostrophe, repeated Jonas, giving the crown of his hat an angry knock. Ah! It's time he was thinking of being drawn out a little finer too. Why, he's 80. Apostrophe, is he, indeed? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the young lady. And ecod, apostrophe, cried Jonas, now he's gone so far without giving in, I don't see much to prevent his being 90, no, nor even 100. Why, a man with any feeling ought to be ashamed of being 80, let alone more. Where's his religion, I should like to know, when he goes flying in the face of the Bible like that? 80's the mark, and no man with a conscience, and a proper sense of what's expected of him, has any business to live longer. Apostrophe, is anyone surprised at Mr. Jonas making such a reference to such a book for such a purpose? Does anyone doubt the old saw, that the devil, being a layman, quotes scripture for his own ends? If he will take the trouble to look about him, he may find a greater number of confirmations of the fact in the occurrences of any single day than the steam gun can discharge balls in a minute. But there's enough of my father, apostrophe said Jonas. It's of no use to go putting oneself out of the way by talking about him. I called to ask you to come and take a walk, cousin, and see some of the sights, and to come to our house afterwards, and have a bit of something. Pecksniff will most likely look in the evening, he says, and bring you home. See, here's his writing. I made him put it down this morning, when he told me he shouldn't be back, before I came here, in case he wouldn't believe me. There's nothing like proof, is there? Ha, ha. I say you'll bring the other one, you know. Apostrophe, Miss Charity cast her eyes upon her father's autograph, which merely said, go, my children, with your cousin. Let there be union among us when it is possible. Apostrophe, and after enough of hesitation, to impart a proper value to her consent, withdrew to prepare her sister and herself for the excursion. She soon returned, accompanied by Miss Mercy, who was by no means pleased to leave the brilliant triumphs of Todgers for the society of Mr. Jonas and his respected father. Aha! Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Jonas. There you are you? Apostrophe, yes, fright, apostrophe, said Mercy, here I am, and I would much rather be anywhere else, I assure you. Apostrophe, you don't mean that, apostrophe, cried Mr. Jonas. You can't, you know. It isn't possible. Apostrophe, you can have what opinion you like, fright, apostrophe, retorted Mercy. I am content to keep mine, and mine is that you are a very unpleasant, odious, disagreeable person. Apostrophe, here she laughed heartily, and seemed to enjoy herself very much. Oh, you're a sharp gal. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Jonas. She's a regular teaser, and she, cousin? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Miss Charity replied in effect, that she was unable to say what the habits and propensities of a regular teaser might be, and that even if she possessed such information, it would ill become her to admit the existence of any creature with such an unceremonious name in her family, far less in the person of a beloved sister. Whatever, apostrophe, added Cherry with an angry glance, whatever her real nature may be. Apostrophe, well, my dear, apostrophe, said Mary, the only observation I have to make is, that if we don't go out at once, I shall certainly take my bonnet off again, and stay at home. Apostrophe, this threat had the desired effect of preventing any farther altercation, for Mr. Jonas immediately proposed an adjournment, and the same being carried unanimously, they departed from the house straightway. On the doorstep, Mr. Jonas gave an arm to each cousin, which act of gallantry being observed by Bailey Jr., from the garret window, was by him saluted with a loud and violent fit of coughing, to which paroxysm he was still the victim when they turned the corner. Mr. Jonas inquired in the first instance, if they were good walkers, and being answered, yes, apostrophe submitted their pedestrian powers to a pretty severe test, for he showed them as many sights, in the way of bridges, churches, streets, outsides of theaters, and other free spectacles, in that one forenoon, as most people see in a twelvemonth. It was observable in this gentleman, that he had an insurmountable distaste to the insides of buildings, and that he was perfectly acquainted with the merits of all shows, in respect of which there was any charge for admission, which it seemed were every one detestable, and of the very lowest grade of merit. He was so thoroughly possessed with this opinion, that when Miss Charity happened to mention the circumstance of their having been twice or thrice to the theater with Mr. Jenkins and party, he inquired, as a matter of course, where the orders came from. And being told that Mr. Jenkins and party paid, was beyond description entertained, observing that they must be nice flats, certainly. And often in the course of the walk, bursting out again into a perfect convulsion of laughter at the surpassing silliness of those gentlemen, and, doubtless, at his own superior wisdom. When they had been out for some hours, and were thoroughly fatigued, it being by that time twilight, Mr. Jonas intimated that he would show them one of the best pieces of fun with which he was acquainted. This joke was of a practical kind, and its humor lay in taking a hackney coach to the extreme limits of possibility for a shilling. Happily it brought them to the place where Mr. Jonas dwelt, or the young ladies might have rather missed the point and cream of the jest. The old established firm of Anthony Chuzzlewit and Son, Manchester warehouseman, and so forth, had its place of business in a very narrow street somewhere behind the post office, where every house was in the brightest summer morning very gloomy, and where light porters watered the pavement, each before his own employer's premises, in fantastic patterns, in the dog days, and where spruce gentlemen with their hands in the pockets of symmetrical trousers were always to be seen in warm weather, contemplating their undeniable boots in moldy warehouse doorways, which appeared to be the hardest work they did, except now and then carrying pens behind their ears. A dim, dirty, smoky, tumble-down, rotten old house it was, as anybody would desire to see. But there the firm of Anthony Chuzzlewit and Son transacted all their business and their pleasure too, such as it was, for neither the young man nor the old had any other residence, or any care or thought beyond its narrow limits. Business, as may be readily supposed, was the main thing in this establishment, insomuch indeed that it shouldered comfort out of doors, and jostled the domestic arrangements at every turn. Thus in the miserable bedrooms there were files of moth-eaten letters hanging up against the walls, and linen rollers, and fragments of old patterns, and odds and ends of spoiled goods, strewed upon the ground, while the meager bedsteads, washing stands, and scraps of carpet were huddled away in two corners as objects of secondary consideration, not to be thought of, but as disagreeable necessities, furnishing no profit, and intruding on the one affair of life. The single sitting room was on the same principle, a chaos of boxes and Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.